Welcome to the sports cast, July 17th, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on digital radio. You can listen to us on the website, which is thesportscast.net. Read the news there. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at thesportscast1 and check out our app, The Sportscast, for iOS. Mexico has won the Gold Cup, the most of any CONCACAF team. And what happened to the U.S.? Join us today, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to The Sportscast.
Hey, Santi. Glad to be back.
Glad to be back. It's been a bit. It's been 1 week of a whirlwind. But we got the Gold Cup concluded, and we can discuss that right now. So Mexico, they only beat Panama by 1-0. It was a goal by Santiago Jimenez at the 88th minute, actually. And it was a close match for the most part. But what were your overall thoughts over this game?
For whatever reason, Panama was never really prepared or able to go at Mexico. They really opened the game sitting back. They continued to sit back, and Mexico came at them and ultimately made them pay, but they did have to wait 88 minutes to get it done. It was not the best performance by Mexico. It was a brave but unambitious performance by Panama. I thought they'd have a little bit more ability to go at the Mexicans, whose defense, you know, I just don't think it's been that good and has been largely unproven over the last few months. But look, congratulations to Mexico. They had to have this victory. The coach had to have it. The players had been embarrassed in a couple of different forums. And, you know, in a situation like this, and we can talk about it, the U.S. Didn't want this tournament like the Mexicans did, and Mexico won the tournament. That's what happens when you don't send your best team. You might not win. We were fortunate to get a B team from Mexico in 2021, and that was a compelling tournament because the two best teams in the Confederation sent their B teams, and we prevailed. We, the U.S., prevailed. And I think they deserved to prevail. This year, we sent the B team, and Mexico, for a variety of reasons, did not. They really needed to pull things back together. Their national program was in a bit of a shambles, and they were rewarded with the victory. So you have to want to win the tournament in order to win the tournament, and Mexico wanted it.
8 months. They had two coaches, Mexico, Hal. They crashed out. Crashed out of the World Cup pretty badly. First time in a while they've not gotten out of the group stage. And a lot of that same team was on this team, actually. And this was a moral booster, I thought, for Mexico. They lost in the Nations League and now winning the Gold Cup. How much of a moral booster is this for Mexico? I mean, I'm not saying there's hope for Mexico because Mexico is always competitive every cycle, but how much of a moral booster is it for them this time around?
I think it's a huge moral boost. How real it is, I can't say, and I don't think the Mexicans would even dare say. You know, let's back up and talk about Qatar. They did go out in the group stage, and most of the complaints from Mexican fans about the World Cup is that they can't get past the round of 16. I think they had qualified out of the group 7 or 8 times in a row. A lot of times in a row was sort of a given. Well, this time they didn't even get out of the group, much less advance with a win in the round of 16, which had long eluded them. That was a big disappointment. The team did not look good. They had opportunities on the final day of that group stage to advance. They couldn't beat the teams they had to beat. They couldn't score the goals that they needed to score. So jump ahead to the Nations League, and they were really completely outplayed by the U.S., who brought their A team back from Europe and kicked the shit out of the Mexicans, really. And I think there were headlines in Mexico City that read, you know, the U.S. is now Mexico's daddy. I mean, that's not language you throw around idly, even in tabloids. They have developed a little bit of an inferiority complex And let's be fair, the U.S. has a golden generation of talent that they have developed, and the Mexicans aren't as good right now. So the team they chose to send to the Gold Cup was pretty close to their best team because they so desperately needed a statement victory or at least a statement performance. They got lucky that the U.S. Went out in the semifinal. We can talk about that match. But this was not a primo Mexican performance. They beat Panama, which has never won a major tournament, to take the crown. But they did need this boost. It is a moral victory. It is a moral victory for the players, for the new coach, who's still an interim coach, for the 75,000 people that packed the SoFi in LA to watch the game. You know what? I watched it, and it was pretty turgid stuff. But when Jimenez scored that goal off the bench in the 88th minute, the place went crazy. So they don't care about moral victories when you are a Mexican national at a game like that. They went for a party. They got the party, and they got the victory. So congratulations to them.
Hey, the SoFi Stadium was actually very packed, as Hal said. It was electrifying. And the ball possession, here are the stats for the match. 52% by Mexico, 48% by Panama, which was a pretty close. I mean, total shots, 23 by Mexico, 14 by Panama. Big chances, 2 by Mexico, 1 by Panama. Big chances missed by Mexico. Accurate passes, 78% by Mexico, 77% by Panama. So the match was pretty much pretty close. Your thoughts over this Panamanian team? Of course, we'll get to the U.S. match, what happened, but your over thoughts for them in this tournament?
Well, we talked about this with regard to Jamaica. I think Panama came into this tournament knowing that the U.S. had not sent its best team, thinking, hey, you know, we can win this tournament. The Panama national team, the Jamaican national team, they don't go into many tournaments thinking they can win it. So this was a big deal for them. The Gold Cup does matter to the smaller clubs in CONCACAF. They don't get to play in big tournaments that often. They don't qualify for the World Cup in a given manner, whereas Mexico and the U.S. do. And I think Canada is now in that grouping. So Canada did not bring its A team either. So they rested all their European-based players back to Panama. They said, this is a chance to make some waves. We want to win this tournament. That was their number one priority. I think their number two priority, though, and the same thing can, you know, goes for Jamaica, is look, when the U.S. and Mexico and Canada, U.S., Mexico and Canada are not going to be involved in World Cup qualifying for 2026. They're all going to qualify automatically. And it's going to be a 48 team field. So Panama, Costa Rica, Guatemala, El Salvador, Jamaica, Trinidad, Tobago. This is a number one chance to play in a World Cup, not just any World Cup, but a World Cup right next door in the United States. So they view the tournament like the Gold Cup. They view any competitive opportunity as a golden opportunity to hone their national team's performance. So Panama looked at it that way. They can't be too displeased. They played well. They were very difficult to break down all through this tournament against all sorts of competition. When they bring their best players, which they did here, they're very, very capable. And I think they are one of the two or three favorites, probably one of the top two favorites to qualify out of CONCACAF for 2026. So I don't know that they can be complained, that they can be disappointed or have too many complaints. They played well enough to win. They didn't get the win. They didn't create quite enough chances. But, geez, they're a tough side.
Yeah, Panama has been doing these great, having great performances this past couple of years. They made it to the 2018 World Cup. They qualified over us back then. So this team definitely has a lot of potential, and I'm sure they'll qualify to 26. I agree with Hal. This same Panama team beat the U.S. They took us to penalties. They were up by 1-0, actually. Mm-hmm. And they beat us in penalty shootout. I thought the U.S. was very tired after, you know, playing 120 minutes against Canada and taking us to penalty kicks. That really took a toll on us against this Panama team. But I do have to give him credit. This Panama team was very good and they exposed us really well as well. Your thoughts over this match?
Well, the positive here is that the U.S. team was tired. And despite the fact that they were fatigued and that they were rather punchless throughout this tournament going forward. This was another game that they fell behind in overtime and came back and tied. That's not easy to do. So they showed great spirit. I think that there were individuals here that helped their cause, and there were individuals that hurt their cause when it comes to making the next step up to play with the top talent with the A team from the U.S. men's national team. Jesus Ferreira said, you know, made a statement in this tournament. He scored 7 goals, including the tying goal in overtime. It was a great goal. Look, he's not everyone's favorite striker. He's a weird striker. He's not big enough to play centrally the way Vasquez does, the way Pepe does. But the guy has quality, and I liked him out on the right side. He played with Vasquez in this game, and he's very good on the ball. And if we can get him, you know, he's a poor man's Pulisic in a lot of ways. He's dangerous. So he kept himself in the conversation with his performance as the most dangerous striker in this side. Turner, of course, is a great goalkeeper. We all know that. And I thought that Mr. Neal, the center back, distinguished himself in this tournament. I loved Senora in midfield. James Sands played very well, I thought, in the middle of this midfield. Mihajlovic was maybe the most tired looking guy on the field. He did a lot of running in this tournament. And in this game in particular, he was in, I think he played all 120 minutes. He was knackered when it was over. I thought this fellow, Jones, at left back was very good. I didn't think much of Brian Reynolds. He just never really looked forward with the ball, as far as I was concerned. And Matt Miazga, I just don't understand why we keep going back to this fellow with the national team. He's a little bit like Montes, who plays for Mexico. Big, tall, rangy defenders. And I think that the game is just too quick for these guys. There's just no way that a 6'5 man can pivot and close a guy down. A smaller, faster guy on the flank. And I thought he was exposed several times, even in the limited role that he played coming on for Aaron Long, who everyone else complains about, but is pretty steady.
That's worldwide. I always hear the Aaron Long complaints.
Oh my goodness gracious. He's gotten on the wrong side of soccer Twitter. Kate Cowell, the young striker, the attacker, showed some, I thought some great initiative, but never really did much. He faced up people and ran at them, but I can think of one opportunity that he actually beat a guy and got away a shot on goal. He, you know, scored a goal, but he just, you know, happened upon that ball. He didn't create much coming in from that left side. I think he's going to be a player. This was probably a good experience for him. Vasquez scored goals when he was given the opportunity, and he couldn't score one against Panama. Buzio, I thought, was, you know, just average. And was given a lot of responsibility offensively going forward and just didn't look that capable, that physically capable. He couldn't run by anybody. He seemed to see the field well enough. Mihajlovic did run by people, but not as often as I would like. The vision is good. Look, these guys aren't going to get these games with the national team under the national team coach very often. So I think it was a good experience for him, but some people distinguished themselves and some people didn't.
Yeah. Overall, I really thought this team was definitely a B team, not at all an A team. We'll see, obviously, Turner back and Jesus Ferreira back and a couple of players. I do think Kyle has a lot of potential, so we may see him down the road. We didn't bring our best for this tournament. Obviously, you know, a whole lot of different reasons. You know, the European players trying to figure things out, you know, and also we had an interim coach, Hal. I don't know if that was a factor. What if Greg Berhalter coached his team? Would it, you know, made it all the way and won the Gold Cup?
I don't think it is a factor. And here's why I say that. In 2021, which was a year before the World Cup, this is the summer of 2021, the U.S. was and every national team side, they were all hurting for games. This was part of the pandemic. Right. Teams weren't traveling. They desperately needed games, matches to keep players, you know, in the system and develop players and get people used to each other. And you just need games as a national team. You just don't play that often together. But what hasn't changed is that the Nations League is impinging upon the Gold Cup. The Nations League, for whatever reason, has become a more popular and important tournament for the top national teams in CONCACAF. I don't know whether this is an economic situation. I think it isn't. I think what really, that, you know, they have smartly scheduled the Nations League to conclude, you know, at the very end of the club season in June. What does that mean? That means that folks who are based in Europe, like Pulisic and McKennie, you know, all these players are fit. They are able to come back and play a short tournament, just, you know, semifinals and finals, and in a week, and then it's over, so that they can get their games in. And they are playing the best from Mexico and Canada. So it has just taken priority for the players themselves and for the federation when it comes to using the top talent. And when that's concluded in June, then they need time off. They need 2 months, 6 weeks off between club seasons, you know, in the end of May. And geez, the club season starts in the middle of August now. So they've had to sacrifice the Gold Cup for those reasons. And that hasn't changed. So here we are again. The U.S. sends a B team because they really can't afford to push their A team talent for that long. It's a long tournament. It's 3 weeks. It's a full on tournament. So, Turner played. He's a goalkeeper. And also he needs games. He's not playing for Arsenal. For the MLS players took, you know, shouldered the load here. And, you know, in 2021, it worked out. And I think as a developmental tool, you know, when you win a tournament like this, even against other B teams, it's a huge boost. You've put young players in a tournament situation and they've succeeded. Great. Well, it didn't work out this time. They played hard. They scored some goals. They came back and won games. They came back and tied this game against Panama in dramatic fashion. They showed good fight, but they didn't have the horses. And I one wonders what the Gold Cup will look like going forward. Look, it's CONCACAF. Anything's possible. It's not the most prestigious Confederation Championship. It's not like the Copa America or the European Championship. It's just not. So now that the U.S. is hosting the next World Cup with Canada and Mexico, I can't see this changing. You know, in 2026, the summer, you know, we're talking about 2024. Next summer is Copa America, which is coming to the United States. And all of those teams, all the good teams of CONCACAF will participate in that. That will be their big annual summer tournament for next summer. What happens in the summer of 2025? I don't know. We got a Gold Cup again. Maybe they bring in the A team, but maybe they're in the same exact situation. Maybe you can't afford to push your guys who are coming home from Europe that week to play a tournament like the Nations League. And then wait a week and then start the Gold Cup and have them tied up for another 3 weeks. They'll be more incentivized to do that because they want to impress the national team coach. They want to create better familiarity with their fellow players on the A team. So it's really hard to know if the Nations League ever moves its schedule to fit more in the FIFA windows so that the European players are playing semifinals and finals in April, say, instead of June. Yeah, maybe the Gold Cup can raise its profile a little bit. But until that happens, you know, I think it's going to be the second class citizen that we have seen this year and two summers ago.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Definitely Copa America will be the A squad. You know, we're going to see the likes of USA and playing against the Argentinians, the Brazils. We'll obviously see Mexico. They're always going to be competitive there. So it's going to be a great tournament. Before we head into the biggest news last night, Christian Pulisic made it official with AC Milan, $25 million transfer. He is in Italy. He is signing in his prime. Hal, your thoughts? Would this be a great fit for Christian Pulisic?
Who can say? I hope it is. You just never know with European coaches. You know, they have their favorites. Milan is a wealthy team. They're bringing in lots of players. I thought they brought in Sergiño Dest as well to play with ACM, but I don't see that's the case. Maybe that was just rumored. For a while there were three or four guys who were all rumored to go there. Pulisic did get signed, and he should play for them. And I'm sure he'll get the chance to play. And if he produces, he'll probably end up starting. He's versatile. He can play, you know, as a two striker. He can play as a winger and a three striker. He can play outside midfield in a five man midfield. I think in a pinch, he's very versatile. But you just never know. I mean, we thought Chelsea would be a good move for him. He didn't play. Too many players. Yeah. Milan has a lot of players. It could be that way there. Who knows? I'm just happy he's at a high profile place where if he plays well, he will get the credit he deserves, because I think he's a very good player who's been underexposed.
One positive thing he got from Chelsea, he was able to win a Champions League. So that's good to have it.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I wonder how a player like he feels about that. I mean, he didn't contribute to that. What you always hear from players, and we hear it about Harry Kane at Tottenham, and we hear it now with Declan Rice having signed for Arsenal from West Ham. These guys just want to play in the Champions League. You know, do they want to win a Champions League? Of course they do, but they know it's the most difficult club competition to win on earth. So they want to have a chance to play with the whole world watching. And do they care about the money that Tottenham and Arsenal make when they qualify for the Champions League? Probably not. They get enough money. They want to play for all the marbles. And you can't do that if you're not playing on one of the top teams in Europe. AC Milan obviously is one of those teams. Check mark for that. And I would point out that Brendan Aaronson now at Union Berlin, that's going to be a Champions League team. They qualified out of the Bundesliga, so he'll be playing Champions League soccer next year. Weston McKennie, he was at Juventus. We were all very proud of that, and when that worked, it worked. But now he's out there. They don't want him. He's training in Turin with a bunch of players that Juventus also doesn't want to sign. So in the long term, so he's looking for a new club. And at this point, you know, he probably just wants a club where he can go in and play. He's not going to be in a position where he can say, oh, I don't want to go there because they're not playing Champions League football. So it's complicated, and it's a little fickle, this process, and you have to look out for your own interests when you're playing at that level. And Pulisic did, and it's worked out well for him so far, but there's lots of other US studs where it has not worked out yet.
Yeah, and we'll see if Musa will join Christian Pulisic, AC Milan, to be a great duo, which is kind of becoming common, you know, where you see these national team players playing at the same club. So I don't know if that's it's probably a good thing, not a bad thing.
Well, I don't know that it's really happened outside of Leeds. And you read the same headlines that I read. You know, Musa, Pulisic, and Aaronson were all rumored to go to AC Milan. Oh, and Sergiño Dest, that's four. Only one of them ended up doing it. It's all BS, pretty much. It's just rumors. It's agents planting stories to stir up, you know, interest, or, you know, at least journalistic interest in these things. Until they actually lay the money down, nothing is set in stone. I just hope these guys find good places to go. McKennie should be playing at Bournemouth. I think he should have taken that deal when he had the chance.
Yeah.
Now they're staying up. Leeds has gone down, and he could have been a star on that team. He could have been a central midfielder, a central player. Now he's in Turin without a club. So good luck to him.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Like Hal says, rumors are rumors. Don't believe it till it's signed and delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Big news last night, of course, it was Panama versus Mexico. But another big news is Lionel Messi is officially presented to Inter Miami at the DVR Pink Stadium. It had the owners, David Beckham. It was a full crowd. There was a rain delay. I have a few friends that were texting me. Yeah, I'm waiting here for like a couple hours. I don't know if this is going to happen. It was really thunderous last night as well. So it happened around 8:09 p.m. last night, presented. Lionel Messi had great things to say. Like he's looking forward to it. And of course, this could change soccer and here in the States. Your thoughts, Hal?
Well, one thing I didn't see was whether or not Messi had any comments on the price of steak at Publix, because I saw so many stories and pictures of poor Lionel Messi just trying to do some shopping at Publix. I wonder if that was staged just so they could get some of those pictures out there, because that was pretty hilarious. I guess it was fun for me to see this type of ceremony being held in the United States. I mean, I've seen pictures of these introductions that are made, you know, when a big signing gets signed. And you know, I remember, did you see that awesome documentary on Maradona when he, Asif Kapadia, the guy who did the Senna documentary? I recommend it to anyone. It was spectacular, the both of them, but Maradona especially. When they brought him into Naples in 1983, he was, you know, ushered into the stadium and the place was full. And they went crazy, just, you know, so he could hold up a shirt and accept their adulation. To see that happening in the States, that it's sort of a a ritual of club soccer now. To see it happening here was fun. And I didn't watch it, I did hear that there were technical difficulties, and but the place was packed, and he's smiling. And what did he say, Santi? I didn't hear.
He said that he's really excited to be here in Miami. Very generic stuff. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to the club. Obviously, Busquets was also presented. So he was there last night. So I am pretty optimistic. I don't think he can save Inter Miami this season, because they're way out of the playoffs. But they do have a Leagues Cup that they can compete and win. So that is something to look forward to. He starts training on Tuesday, tomorrow, and his first match is this weekend.
Now, is Busquets actually going to suit up this season?
I believe he is.
Okay. Well, number one, if you look at the standings in the Eastern Conference and MLS, they're very bunched up. I mean, three or four wins in a row, and Inter is right there. Will that happen? Because Messi and Busquets are there, I don't know. But Busquets is a first-class midfielder. He plays with his head up. He can't run anymore, but he doesn't need to if people are running around him. So they're going to be a lot better, and they're going to have massive crowds. It's going to be a very interesting situation. What I don't understand is whether or not the folks on Inter Milan, the other players, are going to really do the running that they need to in order to make Messi Messi. He hasn't really marked anybody or contributed to that effort since about 2013. So it's been a long time since this dude has played a full pitch game, as they say. So you can make up for that on the Argentinian national team. You can make up for that at PSG in Barcelona, because you've got studs everywhere. That is not the case in Miami. So we'll see how that works. I think Busquets will obviously help, and he'll be a deep lying player who will probably cover for a lot of sins in front of him. But we'll see. It's fascinating to watch. I mean, I will tune in. I want to see it just from that perspective. And he will score goals, and he will score on free kicks, and he will be part of the highlights, and it should be a net positive. But I don't think it's going to be a total positive if they're terrible. And so if he can pull them up and maybe get them into the playoffs, MLS would be ecstatic. If not, I guess they wait till next year and see how he does from the get-go. But it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, should be very exciting. Jordi Alba is also rumored to join Inter Miami. Not yet signed yet, but we'll see. Jordi Alba.
Jordi Alba. Okay.
Yeah, from Barcelona.
Yeah. Oh, there he is.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens next upcoming weeks. His debut will be against Cruz Azul this weekend for the Leagues Cup. So it should be exciting. Tickets for that, I heard about $500. So might be higher by now.
That's right. You're right there in Greater Miami.
I'm 20, 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
So we'll see if I catch a match, but it looks pretty steep there. Well, there you have it. Gold Cup concluded. Messi to Inter Miami. Felicity to AC Milan. Anything else before we close this up?
That about covers it. I mean, we're really only a month away from the English League starting, and everyone starts closely thereafter. So, we got the Women's World Cup. Are we going to
talk about that? That is coming up, yeah. Which the Hawks team were ready on site when they were doing the show yesterday from the Gold Cup. The first match is July 20th in New Zealand, I believe. I pulled up the schedule, and looking forward to it. This could be the U.S. third, their first three-peat for a World Cup, Women's World Cup. So this could be an historic tournament for the U.S. women's.
Hey, let me put a plug in for Dr. Andre Markovitz, who is a noted academic and soccer observer. He's written a million books, but he just published a book called Women in American Soccer and European Football. It's really about a history of the very different evolutions that the women's game has taken on this side of the pond and in Europe. And, I read that book, and I would recommend it to anyone. We share a publisher, that's how I know so much about it. But really interesting situation down in New Zealand and Australia for this World Cup. I mean, I would watch anyway. I'm just a football freak, but you know, the European game has really come a long way. And the reason is that they've finally got, you know, the women there have gained access to the clubs that have the money and the developmental apparatus built in. They've made enormous strides in the last 10 years because these women are products of the academy, you know, programs at Arsenal and Bayern Leverkusen and Barcelona and Man City. So we don't have that here. You know, all of the women on our team came from college soccer. And look, college soccer has been an extraordinary success story, but you can't compare the developmental, you know, bones and chops that the academy system has in Europe and the University of North Carolina might have in one example in this country. So I think that's a long way of saying at this World Cup, I think we're going to see the US really pushed. And I think that I'm not sure they're even favored because they've had so many injuries and so many of their players are very young and not part of that core that won in 2015 and 2019. Whereas the European sides, there's six of them. They've all come into their primes and they're just stocked with players because all of these clubs are developing players in a way that, you know, the National Women's Soccer League, you know, clubs cannot. They don't have the money to or the expertise at this point to have academies in the way that European clubs do. So watch England, watch the Nordic countries, watch Germany, Spain, France, the Netherlands. They're as good as the United States now. And I'd be sort of surprised if one of them didn't win this World Cup. No one's ever won three in a row. This is an older US team, but I think we see this sort of clash of civilizations, as it were, that is going to come to a head and become clear in New Zealand and Australia this summer. So there's a little subtextual drama for you when you're taking in the women's soccer tournament starting on is it Wednesday?
It is July 20th, so it is on Wednesday. Yep.
No, the 20th is Thursday.
Thursday. That's right.
Thursday.
First is on.
So Friday. I think that's interesting stuff. I mean, I think soccer is always more interesting when your team might lose. So while I love the women's national team and support them, you know, for a long time, they were expected to win every match and they did win almost every match. Now they're really going to be pushed in a way that I think is going to be far more interesting. And I'm looking forward to watching.
The playing field has been leveled. So looking forward to it. It should be a competitive tournament. So there you have it.
Yeah.
Hal Phillips, what is the best way to reach you online? Also your book, Generation.
You can reach me at halphillips.net is where I do a lot of content creation and production. But my book, which was published a year ago this month, Generation Zero, is still going gangbusters at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Google Generation Zero Soccer or Generation Zero Hal Phillips. You will find it. And I would encourage you to read it because it's about, you know, the soccer culture that we're talking about and we're enjoying. We didn't have this conversation 10 years ago. We weren't there. Now we're there. And our book explains why it's happened and why it's finally in full flower.
Do you think anyone's going to write the Lionel Messi experiment book?
Somebody will. Grant Wall wrote the Beckham experiment book. And, you know, if you listen to guys like Kobe Jones and some of the commentators, Lexi Lalas, these guys who were around MLS, you know, when Beckham came in, they really see that as an important moment. I guess I do too, but I remember Beckham coming in 2006 or 2007 or 2008. And it was several years before I thought MLS was a watchable product and started growing as opposed to merely surviving. But, you know, I'll defer to them that this kind of move has sort of deep undercurrents of influence. And, you know, if he stays here and makes a go of it for 2 or 3 years, and doesn't just bolt or get bored, I think it will help the league. And it may change the way Liga MX operates. And it may change the way a lot of things happen with soccer in this country that we just can't foresee. But it's darned interesting. It's unescapable.
It's unescapable. What's going to happen in 10 years? Looking forward to it. You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on Twitter and Instagram. And we'll be following along the Women's World Cup. See what happens. History could be made. Hal Phillips, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi. Talk to you next time.
And this is your update.